Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to the Uncle Phil's podcast. I'm your host, Uncle Phil, and I know most of you guys, you get to hear me talk about baseball, football, reality shows, but today I got a special guest, Ralph. Say hello to the audience.
Hello, audience of Phil's podcast. How are you out there?
And we're going to talk about energy, right? And one of the reasons I wanted to do this is I am very pissed off that Governor Hochul and all these other Democrats that are in the New York area have forced any new building to go to electric heat. You are not allowed to have gas anymore new, right? Eventually, they'll get to making the convert, but right now, it's not that. And I got some issues with that, all right? I bought a house, and I'm waiting to do the renovation. And unfortunately, now, because it took so long to get started, I'm going to have to convert from oil to electric, and it's pissing me off. So I wanted to talk about this. I got some major issues with this idea. I'm all for cleaner environment, right? Let's get that up front.
I think everybody's in favor of that. It's just we have different visions of how to get there.
Right. Now, if you want to tell me in 20 years we've upgraded the grid and we're going to do this, okay. All right. That's fine. But it is not, we're not able to do that right now with the grid the way it is. And on top of that, there's other things coming down the pike. But what do you think about, am I incorrect in what I'm saying?
No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, not allowing natural gas, which by the way is a fairly clean fuel as far as fuels go. Not allowing natural gas into new construction in New York City is simply part of the larger effort to ban fossil fuels, you know, because it's obviously a fossil fuel in the same way that petroleum is, but it's a lot cleaner than oil is, and burning any type of liquid petroleum product. The problem is that the politics of it are such that it's still considered a fossil fuel. And it's actually abundant in the United States. It's fairly cheap compared to some other forms of power generation. And I really don't think that they should be disallowing natural gas in a place like New York City where it's abundant and available and affordable.
Now, the election's coming up next year. So she has put a pause on the commercial side, right? Not yet for the individual homes. So
right, but that right there tells you that they're politicizing the issue right out of the gate,
this
right?
That's what they did with the congestive pricing.
Exactly. They're simply doing it for political reasons.
So dummies, don't fall for it, dummies.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if this was something that we really needed to do, no one's, politics or re-election or, any line item like that would really affect the decision at a government level. But it's highly politicized. And that's my problem with the entire climate movement. Now, Phil, I want to thank you once, before we even get started, for allowing me on the podcast. For those of you who don't know who I am, I'm an engineer. I specialize in power, the generation, distribution, and conditioning thereof. And I have degrees in engineering as well as environmental science and technology. And I have a lot of postgraduate certifications in industry-specific things like electric code, power generation, petroleum-based lubricants, things that all pertain to power. And I feel as if the climate movement, and don't get me wrong, I'm an environmentalist, Phil. I've told you this my whole life. I was an environmentalist back in 1984, before it was even cool, when people thought I was crazy for talking about this type of stuff. Unfortunately, the entire movement's been hijacked by a lot of people that are, a lot more radical about it than I am. I feel that we should go to cleaner fuels, but it's not something that we should do through mandate. It's something that should be done incrementally, you know, 1 degree at a time, 1% at a time, not just saying, hey, no more natural gas, no more petroleum, no more, you know, nuclear, whatever. It's not something that we should do in that way. It's something that there should be a conscious effort made to, but it should be done by degrees.
Now, part of me has become a little jaded on the politics in the country, sure, as far as... Like, I feel that whoever is in the pockets giving money to the politicians, that's what they're going to push. Like the solar that was done with Obama, and they took the money and went bankrupt.
Oh, you're talking about like Solyndra and companies like that? Yeah, they gave billions of dollars to them, and they basically went belly up.
Right, right. So I think, you know, that's a problem to me, right? And that I'm not even sure if climate change is man-made or just part of, basically, you know, the earth has always changed. We had an ice age, then we had, you know, then a heat wave, right? This stuff happens in our planet history. I'm all for cleaner stuff. If we can make it cleaner, it doesn't matter if it's changing the environment or not. But I feel that it's being pushed by an agenda to make money.
Well, it's certainly true. And like I said earlier, I believe we're all in favor of doing things as clean as we possibly can. Like, I don't feel we should be dumping pollution into the ocean. We're affecting the fish population. Eventually, it could work its way into the drinking water and things like that. So, yeah, we shouldn't be doing things like that. That said, I'm against the belief that there's some upcoming doomsday. Like, if we continue to do this, we're going to endanger our own existence, but, you know, stuff like that. I think that those types of alarmist statements, I think that's kind of where I really can't get on board. Mm-hmm. You know, I could be in favor of saying, listen, you know, we should make the power companies, you hold them accountable for any waste they produce and get them to clean things up if they've polluted them, et cetera, et cetera. But this idea that if we don't do this, we're all going to die and the world is going to cease to exist, I just don't see that. I see that as an alarmist viewpoint.
I mean, didn't Al Gore say this was going to happen in, what, 2000?
Well, my understanding was that if you saw the movie An Inconvenient Truth, which I think you can easily categorize as a propaganda movie, I think I read that he made 14 predictions in that movie that all should have come to pass by this date. We're in 2025. And if I understand, not one of them actually has. And ironically, you know, statements like this are made all the time. There was a man back in the 1960s named Paul Ehrlich. Paul Ehrlich wrote this book called The Population Bomb, and he talked about how the population would endanger the existence of mankind and such, but, you know, they said there'd be no more food, that drinking water would be completely unavailable. And he went to his grave not that long ago, basically still saying, like, if you just wait longer, this is going to happen. If you just wait longer, this is going to happen. So Paul Ehrlich was kind of the Al Gore, you know, decades before Al Gore. So there is kind of a history of these guys making forward-looking statements that simply don't come to pass.
Well, that's part of the issue, right? We don't know what's real, what's not real. I know we're going to disagree somewhere along the line here today.
Perhaps.
But
it depends on what you say, Phil.
Anyway, all right. So some evidence, they say, of climate change. The rising temperatures, right? They've increased by more than 1 degree Celsius since pre-industrial times. I mean... Okay, that's what I say. The greenhouse gases. Now, this goes back to when the ozone layer was supposedly going away.
Yes, I
right?
recall that.
So
that was a big thing when we were younger.
Yes, yeah. So I don't know that the CO2 levels are the highest since 800 years. But, you know, CO2 is needed for plants.
Sure.
So if we get rid of all the CO2, the plants will die, which will lose our oxygen.
Yeah, I mean, I think their position...
Generalization, that is, obviously.
Obviously. I mean, I think their position is that the CO2 levels normally stay within a certain band, and we're outside of that band, we're higher than that, you know? Mm-hmm. However, we know in the planet's history, depending on how far back you want to look, that the oxygen levels on this planet were at one point much higher, the CO2 levels were much higher. You could read about the medieval warming period, which was a time when it was significantly hotter than it is now. Several degrees hotter than it is now, actually. When I think it was Leif Erikson or Eric the Red, one of those guys went over to, like, you know, Greenland and Iceland over there. There was actually no float ice there when they went there. They literally went there in rowboats, which is totally impossible to do today, you know, because it's impassable now with all the float ice. But back then, there was absolutely none of it. So we know that it was warmer back then. And if you want to go back millions of years, well, then obviously the planet was significantly hotter than it is now. And the ocean levels we know at one point were much lower than they are now. So
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
So a lot of these things change, and I think part of the problem is that we only have measurable data going back for about 100, 150 years. If you go beyond that, then they're just looking at point data, like this area was hot, this area was cold. You know, we obviously don't have any global measurements going back more than a century, certainly two centuries ago. So I think part of what they're doing is they're trying to build a model of what the climate should be in their eyes, and there's really not enough long-term data to really build an accurate model.
So now the third thing they have here is the melting ice and the rising sea levels, right? Mm-hmm. Now the sea levels, I've actually read somewhere that the guy who created the machine said they're using it wrong.
Well, I did read that the IPCC, the International Panel on Climate Change, that they have a model. And one guy who formerly worked there, I think he was a mathematician, he said that the model is correct, the way they've developed it, but they're using it incorrectly. I think there was some measurements in there that they were treating as constants, which are actually variables, or perhaps it's vice versa, where there are certain variables they're treating as constants. And he said that if you use the model the way it's supposed to be used, the way it was actually designed to be used, that the effect is like somewhere between 1/10 and 1/100 of what is being currently advertised. That's a significant difference, obviously. Mm-hmm. That's probably within a margin of error.
All right, so let's start talking about different types of energy,
sure,
right, that we can use. One of them they have is wind energy, and I know you built a wind turbine.
Yes,
for your house, and
yes,
and it worked.
Yes, I mean, there are a lot of clever, innovative ways you can use to generate electricity. You know, you can do it with, tidal generation. You can do it with solar, wind, nuclear. I mean, dams. There's a lot of different ways to generate electricity. The problem is that all of them come with some type of a downside. Now, the problem with wind power is that it's not exactly, it's not 100% reliable. You know, because the wind is variable, obviously. Now, in certain places in the world, there's a lot of wind, and it may not stop that much. So there might be application for it in certain areas. But to look at it as a global solution, that's certainly, I don't believe, a possibility. There's also the problem of cost. That's usually the main thing. It's that you can generate electricity in a lot of ways, but it would result in people's electric bills being thousands of dollars every month, which it's just not feasible.
Yeah, another problem with it is the wildlife, the birds are flying into it.
Sure.
I think it affects the sea life.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're having issues when it's over there. And it's noisy, it's visually doesn't look good.
Listen, there's a downside to every single form of power generation. You know, like our very existence on this planet requires that we alter the environment, right? We build houses, we build roads, everything we do. You know, we have farmland that was at one point wild. You know, it was a primeval forest and such, or it was just grasslands that we've deforested to build farms. This is necessary to support our population if we want to continue to live in the way that we live. So it's not like we can. Unless people want to just, you know, give up electricity entirely, give up food distribution entirely, give up transportation entirely, which is obviously, you know, it's just simply not going to happen. It's not feasible, nor should it happen.
But wind is probably one of the cleaner ones that they have.
Well, it's cleaner in that they're obsessed with this thing called carbon footprint, you know, which I don't really see as important as they seem to make it out to be. Now, obviously, windmills don't generate any emissions. They don't produce any CO2. They don't put any, you know, even carbon monoxide. But there's a certain amount of resources expended in their construction. You know, there are tons of steel, there's concrete involved. And the amount of electricity they generate based on those resources is really not very high. So you might say, you know, we might have to spend all of this power and energy and, you know, resources that have to be mined, like steel and copper and concrete, whatever. So once again, there's a downside to it. The problem is that the downside doesn't exist at the place where the windmill exists. You know, the steel might come from Pakistan, the copper might come from Chile. So all of these things are happening. So it's not really apparent, but there's only one planet, right? There's only, the whole planet is one large ecosystem. You know, we break it down to different ecosystems, but you know, the first law of ecology is that everything is connected to everything else.
Right. And that's part of the problem where we got out of the green energy environment with the world, because we were paying for it and China wasn't, and stuff like that. So
yeah,
why would we have the cost when we have less than use than those guys are having?
Sure. And a lot of some of these countries, especially you're talking about countries like China, where it's all government media, like I don't think we really actually know exactly what they're doing 100%. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they sign papers and they put on a show for us. And I think aside from us and some of the European countries, I really don't think that you can really trust countries like that to actually adhere to any type of treaty or agreement when it comes to stuff like that. China's still burning coal largely.
Right. So one more now. We got, we have a bunch, but how about solar? Everybody's getting these solar things on their houses, and everyone tells me they're saving money on their electric bill.
Sure.
That it works great. I see a couple issues personally, like if there's big trees in your area, mm-hmm. then you have an issue with the sun getting to the panels, and they're kind of ugly.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I personally wouldn't put them on my house because I just don't like the way they look, you know? And they tend to be very costly when you put them up. There's a one-time investment. Now, you could argue that there's a government initiative to, you know, to pay for that. They'll give you funds to do that. But to me, that's an even worse solution, because now you're making the taxpayers pay for it, and people who don't even have solar panels are contributing to this effort. So anytime the government gives you some type of initiative to put up solar panels, to buy an electric car, anything like that, it should absolutely not fall on the backs of the taxpayers to pay for those initiatives.
All right. So next one is nuclear, right?
Yes.
Now, nuclear energy is kind of cool. I think we can heat everything up with using nuclear. But people are afraid of a meltdown.
Yeah, well, nuclear power, in my humble opinion, is probably the safest, cleanest, most economical way to generate electricity. There are countries like France that have been generating between 85 and 100% of their electricity for decades, and they've had no major issues, and they deal with the waste appropriately, because there is a way to deal with it appropriately. Although here in the U.S., we really don't deal with it right, but it's... The problem is it fits everything that people would be afraid of as far as its profile. It's something that people, the average person, doesn't know a lot about. It's something you can't see, something you can't, you know, smell. So you can't perceive it in any way. And we know that exposure to nuclear materials is obviously bad for humans, right? There's a lot of bad health effects that, you know, that can happen if you're exposed in high levels to this type of radiation. So people tend to be afraid of it, and the NIMBY groups get involved, and they don't want them around. But, you know, the U.S. has more reactors than any other country in the world. Although, because we're so big, we don't generate a very large portion of our electricity through nuclear means. It's probably somewhere between 10 and 20%. But we do have more reactors than a country like France, even though they generate percentage-wise more of the electricity through nuclear means than we do.
Well, part of the fear is Chernobyl, and then they had the movie China Syndrome. Mm-hmm. So that put fear into the American people.
Yeah, I mean, listen, all forms of energy generation have risks. I mean, you remember the Exxon Valdez, right? Mm-hmm. When that spilled in Alaska. You remember the Deepwater Horizon, when the offshore oil rig, you know, when that had an explosion. I mean, go back 100 years, there were coal mine explosions. Countless people died in coal mines through asphyxiation, through coal mine fires, you know? I mean, any way that you generate electricity is going to come with some risks. The problem, like I said, with the with nuclear reactors is I think people don't really understand those risks. But one thing people really need to understand is that the Chernobyl was an old Soviet reactor that was decades old. And if you look at its construction, we don't even build reactors in the way that the Soviets did. We have a very different design. And even the one in Fukushima, the problem with that one was that they placed it by an ocean in an earthquake zone. And it took decades, but eventually there was a tsunami. An earthquake caused a tsunami, and that took it out. It started leaking. The new reactors that they have now are so much safer than what they used to build, you know, just 20, 30, 40 years ago. Some of these reactors date back to the 1960s. They're unbelievably old. And the problem is that the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they're very, very difficult to get licenses from to build a new reactor. So the power companies are kind of forced to keep these old reactors running for fear that they can't replace them. It's kind of like if you had a 72 Chevy Nova and I told you you could never buy a new...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Car. Mm-hmm. And you're going to do everything you can to keep that car running, even when it's old and rickety and, you know, it's probably not reliable anymore, you know, whereas they just said, hey, listen, you could buy a 2025 Mercedes-Benz now. You know, you'd much rather do that, but they're not allowing us to do that. Although I'm hoping that will change soon.
So these are all good ways of getting it. And I think it's a combination of everything, right?
The best course of action is probably the all of the above approach.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely believe that. Just try to hold everyone accountable. But if somebody wants to build windmills, let them. If they want to drill for oil, let them. Because the power needs of the country are increasing every year. And there are projections now that we're going to run out of power at some point, which is bad because then we're either going to have rolling blackouts in the way that California does, or they're not going to allow expansion of electrical distribution because of the unavailability.
So, yeah, I just got a couple more things and then we'll go there because sure. I know where you're going.
Sure.
Like electric cars, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody says, oh, they're great. I'm all for hybrids, right? I think if you got a hybrid, that's great. You do a little of both. You have your gas, you have your electric. Part of the electric thing, though, is those batteries are huge.
Yes.
They're very pollution. They're not friendly pollution-wise, right? Because lithium batteries, you got to mine the lithium.
Yes.
You can't get rid of it when it's done.
No.
And people don't hear that. They just know, oh, I got an electric car. I'm doing it for the environment, right?
Once again, it's kind of like the downside. I was talking about it with the construction of the windmills. The downside of electric cars, it's seen elsewhere. Like the lithium has to be mined, either it comes from Australia or wherever it is they're mining it from. And I will tell you, you know, as my job as an engineer in my particular field, I'm a mission critical 24/7 engineer. I deal with batteries every day. And I will tell you, batteries work. They store energy and you can hold a lot of power in batteries. But for their size and the resources that are involved in mining for them and manufacturing them and their lifespan, they're really not very good. You know, I don't care if they're lead acid, valve regulated lead acid, whether they're lithium ion. There's all different types of batteries. And every year somebody comes out with a new type of battery, they say it's better. But I would tell you that if we're going to do anything electric with cars, it really should not rely on batteries, on charging and discharging, like your cell phone works. That's how your cell phone works, right? Mm-hmm. You charge it up, it discharges, charge it, discharges. I would say that we'd be better off going to hydrogen electric. I think that's a much better alternative.
Okay. Now, there is some talk about magnetic energy, and I know you don't believe in this stuff, but...
Well, it's not that I don't believe. I mean, magnets are used to generate electricity all the time. That's actually how diesel generators work. They're rotating magnets inside of... They rotate, you know, copper. You have a magnetic field, you rotate conductors within it, and you create electricity. But the generators typically consume a fuel. They consume mm-hmm. number two diesel fuel, or perhaps they take natural gas. So they're consuming fuel to fuel an engine that will turn the generator that has magnets inside of it. I think what you're talking about are these people who have...
Christopher Chaiba, he claims that generating electricity from the Earth's rotation through its magnetic field was part of the Princeton University study that said that you can actually do this. Now, I don't know if you can store the electric... the energy, but they said you can do this in that study.
Well, I'd have to see the particular apparatus they're talking about. You know, I'm not familiar with this particular person or this particular apparatus that they claim they can build. I mean, typically when you're generating electricity, if you're doing it through motion, it's usually something moving in reference to something that's not moving. Like in a generator, there's a rotor, which rotates, and there's a stator, which is stationary. So if the earth is turning, I would say, fine, but what's the stationary thing that you're turning against to generate electricity? Do you know what I mean? I mean, earth is obviously moving, but I just don't know how they intend to generate electricity based on that motion of the planet.
Yeah, so I only read a little bit about it, so I don't know enough about it. I also watched the Y Files. It's like a podcast that talks about these conspiracy stuff, and AJ, the guy's name is, and they mentioned this, that these people were creating the patents, and then the government was coming in telling them you can't do this. So,
well, once again, I'd have to see these particular cases. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that the internet and YouTube is riddled with these people that claim they have these desktop devices that, you know, they can push them and they'll never stop moving. They're perpetual motion. You can generate electricity. Now, as I said earlier, there are a lot of very clever, innovative ways to generate electricity. But when someone claims they have a device that can generate more electricity than it consumes, you're basically violating the laws of physics. It's something called the law of conservation of energy. And when somebody says something like that, I really kind of have to look at them sideways, because it's a, you know, if you're putting in 100 watts and you're getting out 200 watts, where's that other 100 watts coming from? It's just like water. If I give you 4 quarts of water, you can put it together and make a gallon. If you said, no, I can put it together and make 2 gallons, I would say, okay, where's that other gallon of water coming from? Mm-hmm. It's really no different than that.
Yeah.
So the burden of proof would have to, I'd have to understand how it is they're doing this, but from my standpoint, those types of things are simply impossible.
So if you get a chance, listen to the Y Files, and what he does is he tells you about this, and then he says, you know, it may not be true, right? You know, so he gives you both sides. I kind of like the guy. I don't know his last name. His first name is AJ. So the thing is, I know we're rushed through a lot of these because, you know, time constraints, sure. But I wanted to get to this point. We're going to need a lot more energy.
We are.
In the near future.
No doubt.
Right? And I know AI, right, is using a lot of energy. And you just recently came back from a seminar.
I just came back from Schneider Electric's 2025 Summit, which was held in Las Vegas, Nevada. And Schneider Electric, for those who don't know, it's a global company, and they make all types of different power equipment, you know, whether it's for generation, distribution, conditioning. They make switch gear. They make a lot of different equipment. And they're a French company, but they're global. And their position was that the United States is one country of many that they serve, but we are their largest client. We're their biggest consumer. And we're currently the leader in AI technology, which very obviously relies on data centers, which rely heavily on power and water. And their position was that the U.S., at the current growth of AI and data center construction, is going to run out of power in 1,000 days. And that was as of last month. So that's less than 3 years. Now, obviously, that assumes a couple of things. That consumes that, you know, the growth continues at the rate at which it's been going, and that AI continues to grow in the way that it has been. And they're certain that it's going to. They said that AI is not a bubble. It's not a trend, because 4 or 5 years ago, they made projections, you know, very generous projections as to where it would be today, and it has surpassed those projections. And there's all areas of where they're not currently using AI where they want to. So they believe that the U.S. is going to run out of power in less than 3 years, given the rate of growth. So that's certainly a problem.
Now, these data centers, they're being built now, correct?
Yes.
And how are they supplying the electric for it? I mean, are they like little things? Are they big rooms?
Well, the data centers are thousands of square feet. And the servers in there, which are largely AI servers and other types of computers, they require electricity to keep them running. And then there's another aspect to it where that electricity, as it goes through any type of server, is converted to heat. So that heat has to be removed. So then there's an air conditioning or cooling aspect associated with the data centers, which is equal or greater than the amount of energy going in. You know, it's just you have to, any power going in gets converted to heat, and that heat has to be removed. So typically they're taking power from the local electric grid where they exist. So if they install, let's say, quite a few have been built in Virginia. So if they're building them in Virginia, typically the Virginia Power Authorities, their equivalent of New York City's Con Edison, would power them. But now they have less power available, you know, you start to get into power crunch at high demand times, like during the summertime when everybody's home is using air conditioning. So that's when the power crunch will happen, and they're worried about things like rolling blackouts. Now, if that happens, the data centers, most of them have some backup power source, usually in the form of diesel generators. And some of the people in the surrounding towns, they don't like them because the generators make noise and they can hear them. And there's emissions associated with the generators because they largely run on diesel fuel. So they would go to diesel generator backup if there was, you know, a blackout or shortage of power. However, the people in the local towns, they might actually suffer a blackout. And this is kind of the concern that's happening.
Which brings me to the whole thing, right? The electric, the consumption of electric has grown tremendously.
Yes, and will continue to grow.
And if you look at your bill has gone up big time. I think it's supply and demand.
It is supply and demand.
And that's plus, what's going on.
It's supply and demand, plus the fact that if you tell the utility companies, listen, you guys have to build more power generation, more
distribution. They need the money to build it.
They need money for their construction budget to build that. So they obviously, the only source of revenue they have, you know, barring some type of government grant, is the consumers, so who are consuming electricity. So they'll build that into their bill, obviously, and they'll build it, unless private companies get involved. And this is one thing Schneider spoke about. Schneider wants to see the U.S. build more nuclear reactors because they feel it's the quickest, fastest, cheapest way to expand electricity, you know, and they want to use SMRs, which are called small modular reactors, which are not nearly as big as, you know, like the reactors you have up at Indian Point or Three Mile Island. These are very small devices by comparison.
Nuclear.
They're nuclear. They're very small. I've only seen one in my life, actually, and it was on a submarine, a nuclear sub. They've been using them on submarines for decades, you know, without really any major problems. But they're not approved in the United States for consumer power generation, although they are currently in use in China. They're currently in use in Russia. And the Czech Republic has just, I think, commissioned Rolls-Royce to build, I think, seven of them in the Czech Republic for power generation. So apparently, Rolls-Royce makes SMRs, small modular reactors. And we do have them here, but we just don't use them. Because the problem with them is that they're typically installed nearby where they're going to power. So if you were here in New York, they would put them in the ground in New York. And then once again, the NIMBY groups would get involved because they don't like to see these things in their neighborhoods. And even though if you read about SMRs, they're not nearly as dangerous. Not that nuclear reactors are really dangerous, in my opinion, especially modern ones, but the risk of the SMRs is significantly lower than even modern nuclear reactors because they don't generate enough power to have meltdowns in the same way that something like Three Mile Island or India Point could. And they have about a 20-year lifespan. They're largely maintenance-free. You just put them in the ground. They'll generate between 50 and 300 megawatts, which is enough to power a whole town, you know, like a small city.
And that's not going to the grid then?
It has its own power grid, but it could be connected to an existing power grid. And then they have co-sharing of power where one can draw on the other if necessary. So if this is done correctly, it could actually increase the reliability of our existing power grid while increasing the capacity. This can absolutely be done.
So now, these data centers, are they like big warehouses, or
yes,
are they like apartment, like big buildings like in Manhattan?
No, no. The ones that I've seen have all been just between one and six floors, although you could have them higher. But they tend to put them in places where real estate is not terribly expensive. That's why you don't see a lot of them in New York City or Los Angeles. They are kind of located somewhere outside of that where real estate is cheaper. And they tend to use a lot of square footage. Yeah. And they also need square footage for the infrastructure associated with them, whether it's chillers, cooling towers, generators. Those things are usually next to the site or on the roof of the site.
And how big is that?
They're very large. They take up thousands of square feet.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
They're pretty big.
So you're saying probably what Schneider is saying, that you want to get these SMRs and use them on each data center to basically not use as much energy, electric, from the electric grid. They have their own and support it. Otherwise, it's coming from the electric grid.
Absolutely.
Which can cause some rollouts and, in California, they do that now because of all the electric cars.
Rolling blackouts are a very real threat. I mean, they have them in California almost every year, you know, and that's due to a power shortage. Now, the SMRs, they can operate standalone as an island, just the way it does it in a nuclear submarine. It's completely independent. It can run for years without needing any type of refueling. And you can put someone, put an SMR somewhere and say, we're going to power a data center and this, and the required infrastructure to run that data center. But you could connect it to an existing power grid. Okay. So they're flexible in that way. So you could operate them standalone, we call it islanding, or you can operate it as part of an existing network. And there are people that say, well, they should build a separate network of SMRs only, where they connect to each other, which that could also be done. It's, once again, this all comes down to cost, you know? And I will tell you that per watt of power, the SMRs cost more than the large nuclear reactors. They absolutely do. You're paying for that convenience and that flexibility. But the thing about the SMRs is that they can be much more quickly manufactured and deployed. It takes a long time to build a nuclear reactor in the United States because there's the approval process, there's the construction, there's the testing. It probably takes somewhere between, I would say, 6 on the low side and probably more like about 15 years to build one. That's a very large reactor like Indian Point. The SMRs, they're made remotely. They're made in a factory remotely, and they're literally trucked over and then put into the ground. And this can be done much, much, much quickly. But per watt of power, they do cost more. But it's a situation where the power is available right now. Mm-hmm. And that was Schneider's position, is that you can't use the large nuclear reactor solution because you won't make it in time.
Okay. I'm a novice in all this stuff, so hopefully I did okay with my representation.
You did. You asked a lot of good questions. I think a lot of people have these questions, and I think there's a lot of misunderstanding out there. And unfortunately, as we talked in the earlier part of this, a lot of this has been politicized, and it's either being approved or not approved for reasons that have nothing to do with real world solutions. It's just politicians and politics getting involved, and the NIMBY groups getting involved. You know, mm-hmm. I really think if you looked at it objectively, that we would be doing things very different from how we do them now.
All right. Well, pretty much we're close to the end right now. I wanted to give you an opportunity to just last words. Anything you want to say?
Well, I would just tell people that, you know, if we're talking about the SMRs and nuclear, I think people should read about them because they've been around a long time. They are safe. I think nuclear power is a lot safer than people believe it is by and large. And I also would tell people to understand there's a big difference between the older generation of reactors and the newer generations of reactors. Look at what's happened to cars since the 1960s and cars today. Mm-hmm. You know, the difference in nuclear technology might be even greater than the difference in cars from the 1960s to the cars of today. So, and they're designed by some of the smartest people in the world in that field. You know, there are people that really, they talk about and they consider, well, what happens if this fails? What happens if that fails? You know, they look at the failure scenarios and they plan for these things. And, you know, they're typically built, constructed, and operated by the right people. You know, that's a big part of this, mm-hmm. is you have to get the right people involved. But I do believe that the SMR solution is probably the way to go. And I want to stress that all of the above approach is definitely the way we're going to have to go if we don't want to run out of power in this country. Because the solution is that, well, the end result is that we either have more rolling blackouts in parts of the country where we typically didn't have them, or the government says you can't allow growth. And that's bad because then some other country will do this, and we will no longer be the leader in AI technology and in computer science that we are now. And that's not something that I ever want to see happen. Right. I feel like we have to hold on to this, but there's definitely going to be some growing pains along the way, and there's going to be some fights along the way. But I do believe that we have to move forward with power generation in any way that we possibly can, because as you said earlier, our power needs and our use is going to grow. There's no way it's going to go down. There's more and more people in the country. There's more technology in the country. There's things like electric cars. Every year, more air conditioners are built. More data centers are built. We're going to need more power. It's something that government must address.
All right. Well, again, thank you very much for showing up and doing this podcast with me. And hopefully we could help some people understand it a little better. And I know you helped me a little bit.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me here, Phil. And it's been a pleasure to be here. And I hope you call on me again one day.
Absolutely. Some of your people act like you ain't never had a man before. I tell you the truth. But when
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.